Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther the Queen. All right, you got that? That may be a whole lot easier way to say them. I would like to make sure I don't know how I could make sure that would happen, but just to really, really encourage you to memorize the books of the Bible. It will make preaching and Bible classes so much easier. Somebody says, turn to Philippians chapter 3 and verse 4. And all of a sudden I've got to think Old Testament, New Testament, and where does Philippians fit in and all of those things. And it's, if you'll learn them five at a time, in 5 a week, and 8 weeks you'll know all the books of all the, no, in 12 weeks you'll, at the, how many weeks it takes for you to learn, in a quarter you'll learn all the books of the Bible except Revelation, and I think you already know that one. Okay, we've got 2 months left to cover Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and we've finished the book of Leviticus. There's not a whole lot of questions on that, right? If I were to ask you these questions about the Jews' punishment for cursing parents was?
Death.
Death. What about for adultery?
Death.
What about homosexuality?
Death.
What about witchcraft?
Death.
What about blaspheming the Lord?
Death.
What about murder?
Death.
All right, you got that? You are so smart to get all of that. Now, the flip side of that, we may ask that question, back the other way, and that tell me five sins for which the Jews were put to death. I mean, that's another aspect of that, so you ought to be memorizing it. But we finished the book of Leviticus. Leviticus is a book, and it tells about what? What does Leviticus tell about? We're not saying that loudly. Leviticus tells about? Duties of the Levites. Okay, that's the answer on the card, and we probably ought to get close to that. It tells about the Levites and the duties of the Levites. What's the book of Genesis about? What does it mean? Genesis means what? Beginning. Exodus is about? Exodus. And Leviticus is about? The duty of the Levites. Leviticus. If you can hear Leviticus, that'll help you Levites, and so it tells you it's about the duty. Now the next book, the fourth book of the Old Testament, is Numbers. Why is it called the book of Numbers? Numbering of the people. What's our word in America whenever you count the people? Census. And so it's a census. It's a book that gives the census of the people. Now in my little twisted mind, to help me remember what's in the book, it's not just one census. It is Numbers with an S on the end. And I, in my mind, when I see the book of Numbers, I see almost a capital S there on the end, because they were numbered twice. They were numbered when they came out of the land of Egypt, and they were numbered again whenever they were ready to enter into the promised land. And the period in between, about how many years does the book of Numbers cover? The 40 years in the wilderness. So that's pretty critical as you think about and try to memorize what's in the book of Numbers. That will help you try to remember that there's the counting of the people, and 40 years later they numbered them again. And in Dan's twisted mind, that's why the name of the book is not number singular, but it's Numbers plural, because they counted them as they left Egypt and as they went back into the promised land. Now, they've come down to Mount Sinai in the book of Exodus. They're there for about a full year at Mount Sinai. Does anybody recall, or can you from memory recall, what happened when they got to Mount Sinai? There are four things that really stand out at Mount Sinai. What happened when they got to Mount Sinai? And that's there's more than one right answer, because you could say they ate breakfast, okay? And as long as you didn't say they went to McDonald's, then it'll be all right. What happened at Mount Sinai? They got the law, and you said what? The golden calf. All right. What else? They got the law again. All right. And Moses was up there another 40 days, and they built a fence around the mountain. And major things. What major things happened? We just named one of them, and that is they numbered the people. And there is that. And then the fourth thing that happens there is the construction of that tabernacle. And you think about the last half of the book of Exodus is the description primarily of the tabernacle and what it looked like. And that's why, in my mind, when I think about what happened when they got to Mount Sinai, that's exactly what happened. And so, Chad, I want you to know that because it's on the final test for you to get into heaven. Four things that happen, and it's only on your test, but I've seen your test. And you know what they are? They got the Ten Commandments. They built the golden calf. They numbered the people, and they got the Ten Commandments again, all right? And there's a fifth thing that also happened there, and that is they built the tabernacle, all right? So that's pretty important for us to remember. Now then, they're headed for the promised land. Does anybody know how long it takes to get from Mount Sinai to the promised land? You know, one of the real sad verses in the Bible, Deuteronomy chapter 1 says, it's an 11-day journey. And an 11-day journey takes 40 years. You know, how'd you like to be driving the car and the kids saying, are we there yet? You understand? I mean, now that's what the book of Numbers is about. It tells of them leaving the Mount Sinai. And so as you think about the story of the Bible, you've got the things that happened in Genesis. You've got the selection of Abraham. You've got that threefold promise that's made to Abraham. What's that? I'll make of you a great nation, put this great nation in a great land, and I'll send a great Savior. And so that's what Genesis is all about. It's about the promise God made to Abraham. He makes the same promise to Isaac. It's the same promise to Jacob. And the book of Exodus is the fulfillment of becoming a great nation. And the book of Numbers is almost the fulfillment of entering into the promised land. So God's fulfilled two-thirds of that promise by the time you get to the end of the book of Numbers. And at least they're right on the verge of doing that when they take the census that second time. When they arrive up at Kadesh Barnea, they have numbered the people. And when they arrive up at Kadesh Barnea, how do they find out what's in the land? How many spies were sent out? 12 spies, and not 7 or 40. Harold Pack used to say, anytime Dan asks a question, how many? Say 40 or 7, and you'll get it right, you know, almost every time. Now, they selected 12 spies. Why? One from each tribe. And so now the spies go into the promised land. How is that promised land described? In fact, I think that's one of the questions on this card, is that is the description of the promised land. A land that flows with milk and honey. I sometimes wonder why those two things are mentioned there, a land flowing with milk and honey. Milk's agriculture, and they were, it's very much a part of their lives. Does anybody, can you think of a story in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, I'll limit it to that, where honey has a special significance? That's not in Genesis. That's the reason I threw that in, because as I was thinking about, can you think of a story in the Bible where honey is found? I'm surprised you ladies cannot remember that story. 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it was a theme of one of the ladies' day here. When Jacob sent, what? Yeah, okay, and we had the right answer coming from over here, right? Whenever Jacob sends his sons back down the second time to buy grain down in the land of Egypt. He gives them all the money that was taken the first time. He gives them the money that was taken the second time. And he says, take a little honey. That's the second mile religion. And I thought you ladies would remember it because I remember, you know, the church giving all of you those baby food jars, because every church remembers them now. Baby food jars and the women pouring honey inside those baby food jars so that every lady that came got to take a little honey home with her. Now, and that was really neat. I mean, you can imagine, 250 little jars of honey, and honey 4 feet deep in the kitchen area here, because trying to fill up those jars full of that honey was a real ordeal, because but it's a land that flows with milk and honey. And all it is just talks about how wonderful it was. Now, let me in connection with that, tell you that when you see these pictures of the promised land, or when you see pictures of Israel in this day, you know, they're National Geographic, and people that go over there come back with photos of what's happening over there. The land that you see is not a land that flows with milk and honey. It's about as far removed from that as could be described. But in biblical times, that's what that land looked like. Now, when we get to the book of Deuteronomy, in the book of Deuteronomy, God told the Jews, if you go into that promised land and if you don't serve me faithfully, I will curse that land. And so whenever you see those National Geographic programs about the promised land, you know, sometimes there will be a reenactment around Easter, around Christmas, about the life of Jesus, and they'll show you the things that are. Sometimes there'll be religious broadcasts made from over there, and you see how barren and desolate that land is. It's difficult for us to think about it as a land flowing with milk and honey. Josephus, that Jewish historian who lived in the first century, describes that land, and he said that, figuratively, he said, just stick a stick down in the ground, it'd become a tree. And that's not much of a hyperbole of the way he described that. He talked about the Sea of Galilee and how it was so abundantly filled with fish that it was just remarkable. He describes that land before it was cursed by God. And so if you want a good read, it's just one chapter where he discusses all of that. And, if you want to read that in Josephus sometime, I think that would really be a great, great read. They came back and they said, the land flows with milk and honey. Now, did they bring any photos back of it? They brought back some samples. I mean, a sample of what? What'd they bring back? How many grapes? A bushel? I want you to hear this. They brought back one cluster of grapes. How big was it? Really big. I love that answer, and it was. It was so big, they had to put it on a pole, and two men carried that cluster of grapes. Wow is right. I mean, you stop. I cannot imagine. I can't even get a mental picture. I mean, I can see them bringing back a grapevine or somebody's orchard or something like that. But he says they brought back one cluster of grapes. It was a land flowing with milk and honey. And so they'd been down to the land of Egypt, and they're headed back toward the promised land, and they come back and they said the land flows with milk and honey. Well, there's a little problem that's there. What's in the land that makes us so that we could not be able to take the land? There are giants in the land. What about the walls of the city? You know how they're described? The walls of the city reach up to heaven. That's in Deuteronomy, you read about the walls of the city reaching up to heaven. The Tower of Babel. Remember the tower they built? I remember what was happening in my life when I learned the story of the Tower of Babel. It was where they were building a tower to reach up to heaven. It was at that point in my life that I learned the story of Jack and the Beanstalk. And I had trouble keeping those two concepts separate. And I remember trying to think, you know, is the goose that laid the golden egg, is that in the book of Genesis or is that in Jack and the Beanstalk? I mean, honestly, I'm just a kid growing up, and I thought, because see, when I read that about them building a tower that reached up to heaven, and Jack and the Beanstalk, that's what happened. And so in my mind, I thought, well, God was worried that they wouldn't, that they might get up to heaven by building a tower up to heaven. But the Jews, in their mind, thought about three heavens. The heavens where the birds fly, the heavens where the sun, and stars and planets are, and then the heaven of heavens where God is. And so when they came back and they said, the walls of that city reach up to heaven, they were right. But don't think about the heaven where God is. But the walls of that city, there's no way for us to take that city. And so the Lord's punishment to that nation for failing to believe was that every one of you is going to die, except, and we need to modify that, every one of you, what's the age limit? 20 years or above is going to die. Of those that were numbered, because there were Levites who actually went into the promised land, and they're called by name. And sometimes when we say only two, Joshua and Caleb, they're the only two that went into the promised land that left the land of Egypt, that's not right. The sons of Aaron also made it into the promised land. And they were among those who were numbered there in the wilderness. There was an age requirement before you could be a priest, and they fulfilled that age requirement. And then you read about them when they get into the promised land. And so it's when they numbered the people, they counted how many soldiers they had. Those above 20 years of age, capable of going to war. Does anybody know how many were in that number?
600,000.
Wow! That is great! You only missed it by 3,550. No, that's great. So what did you say? 600,000, and you missed it by 3,550, so the total number was? 603,550. Now, of that number, how many went into the promised land? Of those who were numbered at Mount Sinai, how many of those went into the promised land? Two. Joshua and Caleb. Now think about it. When they go into the promised land, leaving out Joshua and Caleb, and they're rather old, Caleb mentions the fact that he was 40 years of age whenever he was sent out as a spy. It's been 40 years because they wandered that wilderness for 40 years. He's now 80 years of age, and they've taken evidently 5 years to conquer the promised land. And so Caleb says, I'm 85 years of age. So you got Joshua and Caleb, and we'll make Joshua to be approximately the same age as that. We do know the age of Joshua when he died. Ignoring Joshua and Caleb, what's the age of the next oldest person? 59, right? If you're 19 years of age and the next, and you're in the wilderness for 40 years, it's a young, young nation that goes into the promised land. There's some great, great stories that are here. You remember the problem that Miriam had with Moses? You remember Miriam's complaint against Moses? What was she upset about? Upset about, you know, about her sister-in-law. What's wrong with Moses' sister-in-law? She's an Ethiopian. In all likelihood, this is a mixed marriage. You get mighty close to it. I mean, Moses is Jewish in descendancy, and here's a, you know, here's Moses' wife. She's an Ethiopian. And so she murmurs against Moses. Do you remember what punishment God gave to her when she murmured about her sister-in-law? Struck her with leprosy. Have you ever seen a leper without a D? You know what leprosy does? It eats your flesh. When I was in India, on one Sunday morning, I worshiped in a congregation, and about half the congregation were leopards. And they only had one cup for the Lord's Supper. And I'm sitting there thinking about, he that eateth and drinketh unworthily, eateth and drinketh damnation to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. And here's this cup the lepers are drinking out of. So I watched. And they took the cup to the lepers, and the lepers held the cup up and poured it into their lips instead of touching their lips to the cup. And I sure was thankful. I sure was thankful. Remember Hardiman Nichols, who preached in a meeting here? Hardiman was going to India, and he was going to work in a place in India where there were many lepers, so he carried him some really strong soap, so that he could really keep him, you know, as far as he, I mean, it's not that contagious, but, you know, but so he could keep himself. And so he washed his hands regularly, and he looked at his hands there one day. You need Hardiman to tell this story. And there was a red rash coming out all over his hands. He thought he had contracted leprosy. So, he either went to the doctor or somebody asked him, what kind of soap are you using to wash your hands? And he'd carried some of Grandma's lye soap over there to keep his hands. And he told me, he said, I really thought I was going to die of leprosy at a time like that. Book of Numbers. We're not doing a lot of drills on this because you already know the answers. Numbers tells about what? Number of the people, the two times they counted the people. Punishment for Miriam's complaining was leprosy. And had not Moses prayed for her, she would have died as a leper outside of the camp. Did not happen. But she died the same year that Moses died. And she died the same year that Aaron died. Moses was 120 years of age when he died. Anybody know how old Aaron was? How much older Aaron was than Moses? 3 years. Now, how old was Miriam? Well, the Bible does not tell us, but the story of Moses being hidden in that basket with his sister watching to see what was going to happen. And however old enough for that is, you pick the number, 10 years of age, 12, 14, add that to 120, and so she was an older woman whenever she died. She was one of those who perished in the wilderness. The question is, number of men Moses sent to spy out the land, description of the promised land, the report of the unfaithful spies. There are giants in the land. We didn't talk about the matter of grasshoppers. The two faithful spies, Joshua and Caleb. Next week we'll talk a little bit more about this. But